Okay, we're really about to start a new piece of Gemara. The Gemara is trying to figure out how you can have three Yom Tevim, a year without three Yom Tevim, three Yom Tevim without a year. And the Gemara figured this whole thing out. Finally, the Gemara said, you have the scenario, according to the opinion of Rav Shmaya, that Rav Shmaya says Shavuos can sometimes be on the 4th, 5th, or 6th. Okay? And then the Gemara said, who argues against Rav Shmaya? That's where we're middle of over here. So it says the Achedim are the ones that argue on Rav Shmaya, and the Achedim say that there's no difference between Shavuos and Shavuos, or Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah, only 4 days alone. That means if let's say 1 year Rosh Hashanah is Sunday, well, it can't be, but let's say it's Sunday, you know that Wednesday, 4 days later, Thursday, would be the next Rosh Hashanah. So according to him, it's always the same. 1 month 30, 1 month 29, 29, 30, 29, there's no changes. According to Rav Shmaya, the reason why Shavuos can sometimes be the 4th, 5th, or 6th is because 1 month could have 29, 1 month could have 30, both can have 29, both can have 30. According to Achedim, it can't work like that. Okay, so you know what, we're starting now, Boyer Abzeda, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 lines from the bottom of page Vav. Rabzeir asked the Shaila. Until now we learned that if you don't bring a carbon in the proper time, so you're transgressing a negative commandment. The only question is it three Yom Tevim, is it one Yom Tev, two Yom Tev, three Yom Tev, in the order, not in order, all the various opinions. Now Rabzeir asked a different question. About if somebody promised a carbon, he passed away, and now his kids have to bring the carbon. That's the halacha. The kids, because why? Because there's an obligation on the estate, so to speak. Mm. So now the question is, does the kid that inherits, is he also transgressing the sin of Baal Ta'achar? Mm. If he doesn't bring it on time. So the Gemara explained, what's the question? Do we say, the Torah says, if you make a vow, you're not allowed to delay it. Right? That means, if you're the one that made the vow, you're not allowed to delay it. But if the kid who inherits, he never made the vow, so maybe there's no concept of v'holi nodar, like the Gemara says, wasn't the one that made the vow. Dilma, do we say that the pasuk says, the vow says, shom, you have to come there. V'aveisim shom, and you have to bring it. The Torah connects paying up your debt of the carbon by coming to the Beis HaMikdash. The fact is, the kid who inherits also has an obligation to go to the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, I would think, it says, Ubasa Shama, Vaveisim Shama, you should come there and you should bring it. Vahamachayiv, and he is obligated to come to Yerushalayim. So Rav Zeir is asking a question. We know that the one that donates the carbon for sure has to bring it on time. How about the kid who inherits, and the father died before he had the opportunity of bringing the carbon? Does he have to bring the carbon in the proper time or not? Or for him, it doesn't matter. Whatever he brings it, he brings it. So Gemara says, Toshma, come, I'll prove it to you. Because we learned that the Braise, the Tanya, Rabchia learned, it says in the Torah that Hashem is going to request it me'imach. It says, don't delay the carbon. Ki darish yidrashen Hashem alakecha me'imach. God will demand it from you. So what does from you mean? Prat liyoyrish. So the Braise says, excluding a yoyrish. Is the Gemara for? It's okay. So the Gemara says, what do you see from here? Oh, 1 second. The Gemara says, in the Braitz, it says clearly that Hashem is requesting it from you, which means not from your Yerush. So you see that a Yerush doesn't have to bring it on time. Whenever he brings it, he brings it. So the Gemara says, how do you use the Me'imach for that? So the Gemara says, V'me'imach mi'boile. We need Me'imach for something else, which teaches the Leket Shikchem Peah. That even leket shikhem peah are the three things you have to leave at the corner of the field for the poor people. Okay, like shikh is what you forget, peah is the corner of the field, leket is those kernel, the wheat that falls down. So these things you have to leave it for the poor people. So the question is, it says, Me'imach teaches us that even leket shikhem peah, that the Torah obligates you to leave for the poor people, you also have an obligation to pay it on time. So how do you say Me'imach excludes a Yerush, the inheritor? So the Gemara answers, It says Kari Be'imach. The Torah could have said Imach, and the Torah said Me'imach with an extra mem. So the extra mem teaches us two things. Number one, that you have to even like at Shechem Pei, you have to bring it at the proper time. And secondly, Me'imach is only from you, but not from
the,
for the Yerush. So the Gemara says, the one that, the one, if a father passes away, so the child inherits. Oh. So he inherits the obligations too. If a father has promised, let's say, to bring a korban, right? And the father, before he had a chance to bring it, died. So the child has to bring it. Because it was the father's money. He now has the, not from his own money. From his own money, he doesn't have to bring it, but he has to bring it from the father's money.
Father has no money?
Then he doesn't have to bring it. Because it's not in his money. He is in the place of the father. If the father hasn't had the money, then he has to bring it. Okay, now the Gemara says, Bayer Rab Zeda, so now Rab Zeda also asks a similar question. So Rab Zeda asks, Isha Mal Bat Yachad, what happens if a woman promised a korban? Does she also have to, is she also included in the prohibition of bringing it in the proper time? Mm-hmm. What's the question? I mean, why not? Why should a woman be different? He says, Mi Amrinan, do we say, she is not obligated to go up to the Beis HaMikdash on the Yom Tov. Do we say, she has to go for to be Av Simcha. Meaning as follows. There's a din in the Chumash, it says, Yom Tov Yiro'eh Kol Zechurcha. All the male have an obligation to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Technically, the women don't have to go up for Yom Tov. The reason why women went up is because there's another inyan. Women have to be happy. Okay? Therefore, we'll assume men have to buy women things before Yom Tov to make them happy. So, women have to be happy. So they went up, not as the obligation of going up to the Beis HaMikdash, but just to be with the husbands to have the concept of Simcha. So now, do we connect? Because if you look in the Chumash, when the Torah speaks about not delaying the vows, the Torah connects it somehow to be going up to the Beis HaMikdash. The Torah says, don't delay it. When you go up, you have to bring it, and so on and so forth. The Torah is making a big cholent, so to speak, from all these mitzvahs together. Going to the Beis HaMikdash, not delaying a korban and all that. So now the question is as follows. A woman, per se, is not obligated in going to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year.
It is written that she has to be with Simcha.
The Torah says clearly that we have to make the women, the Gemara is going to discuss how.
Okay.
So the question is, women are technically not obligated to go to the Beis HaMikdash per se, right? So the full question is, does that exclude her from the obligation of bringing a korban on time? Or maybe not. The fact that she has simcha, and therefore she goes up to the Beis HaMikdash anyway, maybe that itself obligates her to bring the korban on time. Mm-hmm. So that's Reb Zeira's question. Amalei Abaye, so Abaye says to him, I don't understand. Typically, why don't you say that the thing over here, the liability is, because she's obligated to Isa B'Simcha. She's obligated in the midst of Simcha. And if she's obligated in the midst of Simcha, so that means she has to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. So then she should be included in this prohibition about not delaying it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so the Gemara says that a woman has an obligation to do Simcha. So the Gemara says, how could you say that Abaye says that a woman on her own is obligated in the mitzvah of Simcha, but Abaye says, Isha Baila Misamcha, that the husband is obligated to make her happy. She's not obligated in Simcha. The Gemara thought, Abaye first says a statement, women have to go up to the Beis HaMikdash to be besimcha. That means the obligation of being besimcha is on the woman. So therefore, Abaye asks, then she should be obligated in this prohibition about not delaying the korban. So the Gemara says, but Abaye says clearly, there's not her obligation of simcha. It's the husband's obligation to make her happy. And like Rashi says, how do you make her happy? In Eretz Yisrael, in Bavel, they would buy her colored clothing. And in Eretz Yisrael, they would buy her linen clothing. That's the way they made him happy. So, Taisa says, that's only nowadays. In time of the Beis HaMikdash, you have to give her meat and all that stuff. And so Taisa says, The Baalim Misamcha means the chiv is on the husband, not on her. Therefore, you know, whatever. Yeah, that's what she said. In Shulchan Aruch there's a din, because it says you have to make your wife happy. So the men are happy, it says, with wine and meat. That's why you have to eat meat and wine on Yom Tov, even Chol HaMoed. And women, by buying them clothing and stuff, jewelry, things that make them happy. It's an obligation, by the way. Okay. So the Gemara asks, so Gemara says, you see that the simcha of a woman is not on her, it's only on the husband. So how can you obligate a woman in Baal Ta'acher about this prohibition if it's not up to her? So the Gemara answers, L'dvav the Rab Zeira Komar. You're right. Abaye personally holds the obligation of simcha is only on the husband, not on her. But he's speaking to Rab Zeira. Rab Zeira says that maybe she's obligated in simcha. So he says, if she is, according to you, personally obligated in simcha, so then there is an obligation for him Baal Ta'acher. That's what Abaye said to Rab Zeira. But he personally holds that the obligation of making the woman happy is on the husband, not on her. So according to Abaye, for sure a woman can't be obligated in Baal Ta'achar. Number one, she's not obligated to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. She's not even obligated personally as herself to go up for Simcha. It's not exactly, but it's similar to the concept. The mitzvah pruervu of having children is on the man, not on the woman. A woman's not obligated in pruervu. Technically, a woman doesn't have to get married. The Gemara says, there's another pasuk that says, God didn't make the world to be empty. Hashem wanted a civilized world. So women also really, you know, have this concept. But the mitzvah per se of pru or vu is not on a woman. But a man can't do a mitzvah without the woman, obviously. So she has a part in it. But the obligation's on him. But she's there to help him, because otherwise he can't have a kid, right? So the same thing with so to speak, with simcha.
Three partners. The one is Shlom,
yes.
The husband and the wife.
That's true. You need the third partner too.
Yeah.
Okay, now the Gemara says, Iboy Elohu, I'll ask you a shayla. B'chad me'masi meinun leishana. We know that a carbon, if a firstborn animal has to be brought as a carbon, and as we say every morning in davening before Haidu, in Ezel Mekayim, and we say, Abuchar Nechal HaKehanim. But if somebody has an animal that gives birth to a firstborn animal, so that animal has to be brought up to a carbon. Now, how long do we have? We learned, a year. You have a year to bring every obligation, right? After the year, you're over Baal Ta'acher, about delaying it. So now the Gemara asks, when do you count the year of a firstborn animal? What's the difference? The Torah says any animal that you want to bring as a carbon must be 8 days old. The Torah says 7 days the animal should be with its mother. On the 8th day you give it to me. So the halacha is a carbon is not kosher for a carbon until the animal has ate any carbon. The animal has to be 8 days old. So now when a b'char has to be brought within a year, is it from birth or the year from the time it becomes kosher as a carbon, meaning 8 days old? So do you have basically a year and a week, or is only a year? That's the question. When do you transgress Baal Ta'achar? See, boy lahu, three lines in the bottom. The Shaila was asked, B'chor me'masim me'nim le'shon, when do you count a year for a b'chor? So the Gemara says, Abai amar mishoshenelet. Abaye says, from the time it was born. The Torah says, a year. It's a year from birth. From the time it's acceptable as a carbon. Meaning, after 8 days. So Abaye says the year starts from the birthday. And according to Ravach Bar Yaakov, it starts 8 days later. The year.
But what if, like, because yesterday in school, our teacher, he showed us pictures that he got online of the 50 from the Paratuma. But let's say, like, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the firstborn was, like, a Paratuma. Then would they have to bring it as a Korban?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think it ever happened that the... a good question. I don't think it ever happened that a firstborn was a paraduma, but technically they probably would have to.
Ooh.
They probably would have to. But Hashem wouldn't make a paraduma be born as a firstborn if the Jews would need another paraduma, and because of this they wouldn't have it. You know what I mean? I don't think Hashem would make it happen.
Couldn't they make a korban and use the paraduma?
No, because it's a completely different korban. The korban of a bechor is eaten by the kohanim. Paraduma is a din of a chatos and kodesh. It's a whole different type of a korban. You can't mix two korbanos together. A korban that's an eila, a korban that was designated, let's say, as a burnt offering, you can't bring it as a shlamim. If it's a shlamim, you can't bring it as an oila. A b'chor is one type of carbon. Paradum is a completely different style carbon. Completely. It's shechted in a different place. It's burnt. I mean, everything is different.
Well, I have the answer to that. But Mashiach has to come before that happens. So, will you give us the answer?
Yeah, but again, I don't think it ever would happen anyway that Hashem, unless if there are a few paradumas. But a paradum is a necessity for the B'nai Yisrael. When the Jews needed one, Hashem made one. Right? I mean, Hashem made one. So if Hashem's going to make a firstborn paraduma, and then you're not going to be able to use it a paraduma, so the Jews would be stuck, I don't think Hashem's going to do it. Unless you know, Hashem would do it. But technically, I imagine, again, I didn't see it, I imagine that if a paraduma is born as a firstborn, you have to deal with it as a firstborn. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Abaya holds from the time it was born, the Vacha Bar Yaakov holds from after 8 days old. Starts the year. But the Gemara says, well, they're not even arguing. Abai and Ravacha Bar Yaakov are not even arguing. What's the difference? Habitam, Ravacha Bar Yaakov refers to an animal that was born unblemished. It means there's no broken foot, there's no things like that.
What if it's a runt?
A what?
A runt.
What's a runt?
Like the little animal, when they're born very little and sick.
But then it's a mum, but it's also blemish. It's also blemish. So therefore, the Gemara says as follows. If the animal is born with a mum, where it's not a blemish, where it's not kosher for a carbon anyway, so then you have to call it from the year it was born. But if it was a complete unblemished animal, where it is kosher for a carbon, then Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is right. And they're not arguing. They're talking about two different things. Abaya, who says you count the year from birth, is talking about a carbon that was born blemished. So then it's not a kosher carbon anyway. So the whole concept of 8 days waiting until it becomes accessible and kosher for a carbon is totally irrelevant. But you still would have to give it to the kohen.
A blemish?
Huh?
A blemish.
Oh, so the Gemara asks, Ha, ba'al mum, on top of the page, mi matzi achale, so how can you, but forget it, how can you eat it?
Mm-hmm.
How can you eat it if it has a blemish because you can't shecht it?
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemara answers, I'm sorry, wrong point. Rashi explains, how are you allowed to eat it the day it was born? Because maybe it's a nafil. A nafil means that there's a din by people, let's explain the din. There's a din by people, you redeem a firstborn baby, which is also b'chor. Okay, firstborn animal, but it's a human, you redeem it after 30 days. And a firstborn, what's called pinyon aben, you do on the 31st day. Why do you do a pinyon aben on the 31st day?
What's
we have to redeem the firstborn, you have to go to the kohen, give him $5 silver, and then you buy back the baby from the kohen. So he says, why do you have to wait 31 days? Because there's a din, until 30 days, a baby is not a viable living baby. You don't know. You need to be a month old. So up to a month, so to speak, the Torah says, the father tells the kohen, how do you know the kid's going to live? He doesn't have a chazakah of living yet until, and therefore, according to Allah, it's interesting, I'm not saying people should do it, if somebody murders a baby that's not 30 days old, they don't get capital punishment. Because there's no proof that the baby is a viable baby yet. Because it didn't live 30 days, which gives it a chazakah, an established living. And that's why you don't do a pinyon aben until the 31st day, because if the baby dies, you don't have to give money to the kohen. So to speak, the Torah says, until we know for sure the baby is 30 days old, there's no viable baby yet, so therefore there's no mitzvah pinyon aben. When the baby turns 31 days old, on the 31st day, that's when you have to do a pinyon aben. By an animal, especially if it has a blemish. We don't know if the animal is going to make it. It might be what's called a treifa. If an animal is going to be a treifa, you're not going to be able to shecht it. Certain blemishes, even if you shecht the animal, it's still not a kosher animal. That's why you have to check the lungs, you know, the whole thing in checking animals. So the Gemara says you can't even eat an animal that was born on the day, because maybe it's a nafil. Maybe it's going to die before 8 days old, and then even the shechita is not going to be a kosher shechita. So the Gemara answers, it's speaking, shekalu lo chadashav. You know that the baby, the animal, was born full term. And it's a complicated thing. A full term animal is deemed viable immediately, and therefore you can be slaughtered and eaten it. Therefore the year is counted from the day of the birth. That means, I think he says at the bottom, if we don't know the animal was full term, if you don't know the animal was full term, then you count the year after 8 days. If the animal was full term, then you count it from the day it was born.
What happens if
full term is also could be
by an animal? The question is, how do you really know? How do you really know it's full term? The mashal, the same thing applies by humans, by the way. According to Torah, even though now because of science, medical, it's different. Halachically it's different. But according to Torah, a kid is either born after 7 months or 9 months. Yeah. In the eighth month, if a kid is born, it's mukta, you can't do it, it's dead. I mean, it's not going to... I'm saying the olden times. Nowadays, because of medical intervention. Mm-hmm. But in the olden times, the Gemara says that a kid was either born after 7 months or after 9 months. In 8 months, it was called like a stone. His mom is not viable at all. So the Gemara says, how do you know if a baby's born full term or not? How do you know if a baby's 9 months or not, you know? So it says that the parents had relations and that was it until the baby was born. Because otherwise it's impossible to know when did the lady become pregnant, halachically, you know, what the whole story is. It's the same thing over here. It's possible that the animal was full term, and then the din is you would be able to eat it even the day it's born. If it has a blemish.
Not the cob.
No, not a cob. We speak, that's why if it has a blemish, you can eat it. Mm-hmm. What do you want to ask?
So for just to eat an animal, you can even check it on the first day that, like, it's been alive.
Yeah. Yes.
We're learning rockets, I believe. If the animal is pregnant, after you check it, you find out that it was pregnant, had a baby in it. You don't have to check that one.
The baby.
The baby.
Right. Well, the shechita of the mother is valid for the baby. Right.
Yeah.
It's called Bempekua. Bempekua is a baby that you find inside a viable baby. That's when you shech the mother, you open up the mother, you find the baby inside it. So the mother's shechita.
It's a live baby?
Huh?
It's a live baby?
Yeah, well, if it's dead, but I'm saying if it's a live baby. Mm-hmm. You can take the baby out, you can do with it whatever you want. Whenever you're ready to eat it, you shoot it, you kill it, you do whatever you want, you don't have to shecht it. The shechita helped already. You have the same thing, by the way, by humans. Not shechita. But if a pregnant woman converts, yeah? So the baby is a convert. The baby doesn't have to go through conversion.
Is it a convert or is it a Jew?
No, convert. Because it goes from conception.
If it was done before the...
Before conception, then the kid's a full-fledged Jew. Yeah. If a pregnant woman converts, so the conversion that the mother did is valid for the baby. 1 second. But the kid has a din of a convert, because it wasn't conceived Jewishly. Now, if the baby's born a day old, an hour old, whatever, and the mother converts, then the kid's not a convert. So you have connections of within the mother yet, if it's good or not good, you know, all that stuff. Yeah.
What happens if you don't know and you shecht the mother and the mother's pregnant, and inside her is a baby? Is the baby also shechted?
Yeah.
Did it count as
shechted? Yes, it's shechted. Yeah.
So what if the mother is following all the rules and is in the process of becoming a Jew, a convert?
Until you convert, no. Until you convert, it's not conversion. If a woman's learning all about conversion, and she's even doing mitzvahs, but she didn't convert yet, and the baby's born, it's not a convert. The kid's a guy. You have to separately convert the baby. If the mother was pregnant and she actually converted, because learning conversion is nothing. I mean, it's the process, but it's the conversion, the mikveh and acceptance of mitzvahs is what does it. It's not learning about it. It's not saying I want to be Jewish is also nothing. It's actually the actual conversion.
To convert that baby, the baby would have to reach that mitzvah inside or later or when for the baby.
No. No, the Gemara says, and the Gemara says in Ksubis, and it's a din in Shulchan Aruch, ger katan matbil neisel das bezdin. A ger katan, you convert according to the knowledge of bezdin, meaning based on bezdin, which is, by the way, a very common process. I mean, if you have a couple that adopts a baby, adoption, and they adopt a non-Jewish baby. And let's say they adopt a baby a month old. Many times they, you know, adopt a baby from birth, right? So obviously a baby that's, they usually wait 6 to 8 weeks minimum, because you have to put the baby in a mikveh. I mean, you can't take a newborn and dunk it in the mikveh, you know what I mean? It's not going to make it. You wait until the baby's old enough to be able to be dunked in the mikveh. Bezdin converts the kid. Okay? The kid is a full-fledged Jew. The only difference is, on the day of Bar and Bas Mitzvah, you know, boy or girl respectfully, the kid, if on the day of Bar Mitzvah, the kid says, I don't want to be Jewish, he's not. If he doesn't say anything, he remains Jewish.
So that means you have to tell the...
No, you don't. That's what they don't tell the kid.
Oh, they don't?
No. Because they want the kid to say, not Jewish, you know what the problem is going to be. They don't tell the kid anything. The kid lives as a Jew. And that's it. Because halacha is, only if he protests it, and he says, I don't want to be Jewish, then he's not Jewish. Here's the option. But this is the problem, by the way, with what's going on, a very big problem today in the conversion halacha, in today's, because what happens if you have a non-religious couple? A Jewish non-religious couple. And they want to adopt a non-Jewish baby. Yeah? So now, a Bezdin's going to think that an Orthodox Bezdin, I hate the word Orthodox, a Frum Bezdin won't convert that kid. Why? They're going to convert the kid to be, and make him Jewish, right? And then he's going to grow up to be not Frum. And why should a Bezdin want to bring non-Frum, you know, we have enough problems as it is. It's like the world says, what's the big deal of conversion? It has to be halachically correct. There's so many non-religious Jews anyway. You know, who cares if you have a few more? Right? The answer to that is, you have the same thing in the countries. When you want to get a residency visa to come to America, you have to go through a health test. I mean, a physical. The question is, there's so many sick people in America anyway, so what do you care if you get more sick people? The answer is, the ones we have, we're stuck with, so to speak. I mean, it's a funny word. The ones we're with, we're stuck with. But to bring more in, that we don't want. I mean, that's the way governments work. So same with Yiddishkeit. You want to bring somebody from into your, to bring a convert is not going to be from. I mean, what are you doing? So a from Bezdin, as a rule, won't adopt, won't be Megaya, a baby, unless if the parents are religious. I mean, why should they? It's only going to make problems later. Okay? But the kid would be a Jew if they do it. The kid's still going to be Jewish because you do it al das bezdin. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, and they are bar bas mitzvah. But there's another, this is going, we're sidetracked anyway already. There are certain people that when they adopt babies, dafke adopt a goyish baby. They dafke adopt a goyish baby rather than a Jewish baby. And they megayah, I'm talking about from people. And then they megayah the baby. And they raise him as a frum person. Why? What's the advantage of raising, of adopting a goyish baby over a frum baby? So, the advantage is a halachic advantage. Because when you adopt a baby that's Jewish, you really don't know who the parents are, who is the family. The kid's definitely not going to know who the biological parents are. So when they get older, they might end up marrying a relative of theirs that they wouldn't be allowed to marry. If you adopt a guy and you convert him, even if the guy has a brother and a sister, even if the guy's sister also converts and he ends up marrying her, it also doesn't matter.
Why is that?
Huh?
Why?
Because in technical halacha, a guyish brother and a sister who convert can technically marry each other. The Chachamim say you don't do it. Why? Because it doesn't look right that as goyim they couldn't marry each other, and now as Jews they could.
Why?
Because it's a newborn baby. They lose all relationships. Huh. They lose all relationships. So if a brother and a sister, goyim, convert, in technical, not realistic halacha, because people are going to say, look at this, it's goyim, they couldn't marry, and now it's Jews, they could marry, it doesn't look right. But technically, you can have a goyish brother and a sister. So therefore, if you convert, if you adopt a goyish kid who converts, what are you afraid of? He might end up marrying his sister one day, who cares? He could. But if it's a Jew, who knows who they might end up marrying? And it's a very big problem when it comes to adoption.
And the Jewish
there's a story with the Mirami Prague with the Gailam. If you ever read the book The Gailam, there's a story with the Mirami Prague. There was a whole story with a chuppah. It's a whole long story about family was thrown into a pit and then the family escaped, but they left one kid by mistake in the pit, and the kid, a whole long story. The Mirami Prague was once under a chuppah doing a chuppah, and he was about to do the bracha and the cup fell out of his hand. And he took the cup again, and again the cup fell out of his hand. So the Mirami Prag understood there's something wrong here in this wedding. And he sent the Gailam, the whole long, he sent the Gailam, and the Gailam, in the Gailam way, you know, found out, and the end result was that this was a brother and a sister about to get married.
Jewish?
Yeah, yeah. Jewish brother and sister about to get married. They were separated from birth, and they never knew. And the Mami Prague realized that the Eibishter didn't let him, because the Mami Prague is a tzaddik, Hashem's not going to let him do something, God forbid, which is wrong. So Imamish, the cup fell out of his head. So there are possibilities. I mean, it's remote, granted. But still, you know, you don't want the brother ending up marrying a sister or the forbidden marriages. So therefore, when you adopt a guy, that issue, at least for sure, you don't have a problem with. There are other problems, but that issue is not a problem. Okay, back to the Gemara. Now the Gemara starts a new Gemara. I mean, also about Nissan, but it's a new Gemara. Second line from the top. Tan Rabban Rabbanan learned. Ve'era b'Nissan, on the first day of Nissan, Rosh Hashanah l'chadashim, it's the new year for months, meaning that we know that the first month is Nissan. Uli'iburin, and the Gemara thought now, the Gemara is going to refute it, but Rashi says the Gemara thought now that it means, but the Bezin has to sit on Rosh Chodesh Nissan to figure out if they're going to make a leap year or not. Utrum Shkolim, and to start separating the Shkolim, because, you know, you start collecting the half a shekel, and then you have to know Nissan starts the new year for the shekels. And Vaflas Chiras Batim, and some people say Aflas Chiras Batim. It also goes for rental of houses. What does it mean, rentals of houses? So Rashi says, what happens? He says, I'm leasing you the house for this year. When is the year over? So I'm renting you the house until the end of the year, or I'm renting you the house for this year. So the Gemara says Rosh Chodesh Nissan starts a new year, so the lease is up Rosh Chodesh Nissan. I mean, I think you have that in the secular system too. If a guy in April or September says I'm renting your house until the end of the year, so in the secular says December 31st, the end of the year, then you have a fiscal year, right? I mean, you have different
what's a fiscal year?
You get older, you know. When the business year starts, the money year starts. So that's another thing, and then you have the tax year. I mean, everything begins the own year. So the Gemara says the Rosh Chodesh Nissan is the Rosh Chodesh for months, and the Gemara thought now for proclaiming a new the leap year and so on. So the Gemara says, L'chadosh minayin. How do I know that Nisan is the first of the months? Now simply we would say, what do you mean? It says, Achedish hazeh lachem resh chadoshim. Yeah? The question, how do you know it's Nisan? Doesn't say Nisan. It says, this month is the first month. How do you know it's Nisan? The Gemara is going to get into this. Chadoshim minola, and how do we know it's the first of the months? Tachsiv, it says in the Pasuk, Achedish hazeh lachem resh chadoshim, that this month, which we know meaning Nisan, but the Gemara doesn't know that yet, that this month is the first of the months. Rishon Olochem Lechad Sheyashana is the first for the months of the year. And then the Pasuk says, Dabro Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael, Leimer, speak to the Yidin, and tell them, Be'elso Lechadish on the 10th day of this month. V'yichulem Yisrael V'esav V'esel Abayis, you should take, you know, the sheep on the 10th day and tie it to the bed and check it out, whatever. V'yichulem Lishmeres, and it should be a safekeeping at Abbasayim Lechadish Hazeh, to the 14th of the month. V'shochto Eisei Chol Kal Adas Yisrael. And we know that when was the Korban Pesach brought? In Nisan. Right? So obviously, if the Torah says, this is the first month, and this month bring the Korban Pesach, so we know that Nisan is the first month.
How do we know the order of the months then?
Oh, one second, then I was going to get into it. It says, you have to keep the month where the first ripened produce is, which month is when fruit ripen, have a name, is it Nisan, it's Nisan. In other words, you have to understand, we take so many things for granted because we learned, I mean, officially, Rashi, whatever. The Torah says, this month is the first month, on the 14th day of the month, bring a carbon. The Torah doesn't say which month it is. Maybe it's Tishrei, maybe it's Cheshvan, maybe it's Kislev. The Torah says, this month is the first of the month. There's no names in, by the way, we know that. In Chumash, there's no names for any months. It's all numbers. Tishrei is the seventh month, Sivan is the third month. There's no names in Chumash for any months. Okay? So now the Torah comes along with a statement, this month is the first of the month, on the 10th take the carbon tie to your bed, and the 14th bring it as a carbon. Question is, how do you know which month it is? So the Gemara says, because it says, Chedesh Aviv, when the fruits ripen, what month does fruit ripen is Nisan. Is a proof that the month that the Torah is talking about is Nisan, and the Torah says this month is the first of the months.
What if a fruit ripens?
Well, actually, the Gemara is going to ask, Ve'eme ear, maybe it's ear because there's fruit that ripens in the ear. Maybe it's ear. So the Gemara says, no. Bina aviv, you need the first ripened produce. V'lekon, that's not true, because ear is only later fruits ripen in ear, but the Torah says the first of the month. So Gemara says, Ve'ema other, maybe other, because other is also a month that certain fruits ripen. So Gemara says, no. Bina rev aviv, you need that the majority of the fruit ripens. And that's Nis.
But lots of different fruits ripen in
But the Gemara says most of the fruits ripen only in this.
But there are many fruits which you can only get in the winter, like peaches or something.
No, that's in the summer. But we're talking about basically the grains. So the Gemara asks, Midi Reiv Aviv Ksiv. Does the Torah say the majority of the ripening? The Torah doesn't say it. So again, the Gemara says, how do you know this month that the Torah is talking about refers to Nisan? I mean, we take it for granted. But it doesn't say anywhere that this is Nisan's the first month. So the Gemara says, okay, we're different pasuk. Okay, we'll stop here.